Well, over the past decade, I guess you could, perhaps even longer, the pendulum in the world swung to woke, centralized control. Pretoria will provide, or if you're American, a Washington will provide. Big business will protect. Others know what's best for us. Didn't work out that well, did it? Well, it seems to be changing big time. And one of the few people to call it out was Rob Herzog. He did so very publicly, took a lot of bumps for it. But now that the pendulum is swinging back, I'm very keen to get his views. Rob, I say I. It's not I. It's the biz news community. Everything you seem to be saying nowadays, people are so fascinated by. The last conversation we had, more than 130,000 people have watched it. And they've actually watched it for a long time, over 10 minutes. So what you have to say does matter to our tribe, and they hang on every word, but they certainly do listen very intently. And yet you still get kickback from the establishment. I suppose there are people heavily invested in the status quo who don't like the fact that things are changing and then use you as a bit of a lightning rod. Do you find that?
Yes. People say to me, how come you upset so many people? And I say, I tell the truth. It's as simple as that. I really do tell the truth. And everyone pussyfoots around issues, you know. So I went to a dinner last night, a dinner party at Val d'Avis, with a very interesting group of people. I hadn't met most of them. And the host is a private equity wizard from London, very successful, big name. And he and his wife, lovely couple. And I went to dinner. And sure enough, within seconds, the conversation got onto the election in America. And I went, it's a new era. It's such a good thing. It's wonderful Trump won. And, you know, three of the women went, oh, he's a misogynist. He's a terrible person. He's a criminal. And, it's just quite extraordinary how lightheaded some people are. They look at the man. They don't look at the policy. They don't look at the people around him. They don't look at the presidential run he had 4 years ago, over 4 years ago, the fact he's been in the waiting room for 4 years. And people are extraordinary. And our host said a very interesting thing. I'm going to go straight into this. He said 80% of men are macho and 20% are sort of effete, elite type. And 80% of women are sort of the caring, homebody, empathetic type. And 20% are more sort of the macho women. And this swing has been a swing to the manosphere. And I read that in an article. I like that description. So the Trump American era has arrived. And I think you'll have Republicans for 12 years. You know, Trump has one more term as president. And then it'll be J.D. Vance or Tulsi Gabbard, my view. For 8 years. So it's 12 years of Republican rule. Wonderful. It's the technology era. And I know everybody's been saying since the internet was created and, you know, the blockchain was invented, it's now AI. And now we're into the real technology era. And which country is best positioned for that? America. So it's Republicans, America, technology, and everything, and male. I think, you know, men are tired of being called racist, misogynist, second-class citizens, weaklings. All the minority groups have had their say. All the woke ideologies have had their say. And the pendulum has swung back. Enough's enough. And Trump is the manifestation of that. You know, he appeals to the macho instinct and not the effete intellectuals of the Democratic Party. And he won in what was very close to a landslide.
Yeah, that's a very important point. Before the election, you were G-ing up the guys on the WhatsApp channels to say, who do you think's going to win and by how much? We all got, well, most of the Biz News tribe got it right. They over 80% said that Trump would win. So they weren't buying the legacy media nonsense, really. But very few, I don't think anybody got the actual number. Everybody,
even I didn't.
Went there were way below what happened. So even though you called the trend, it surprised even you.
So I called Trump at 285. I was going to say 300. And then I thought, you know, I did get affected by mainstream media and all the commentary that. And why did that happen? Why did we get affected? At the dinner last night, okay, there were six men and six women. And I said to the lady who was freaking out the most about my comments on Trump, I said, every man at this table would have voted for Trump, including your husband. I had never met the guy. And I said, probably three of the six women at this table would have voted for Trump. But nobody would have admitted it beforehand, and no one's going to admit it tonight. But no one's going to disagree with me because it's true. And I said, you and probably two of the other women at this table probably would have voted for Kamala. And that's what happened leading up to the election. People knew they were going to vote Trump, but didn't say it. And my daughter comes home from school, from Herschel, and says, Daddy, please don't be so Trump, Trump, Trump. You know, everyone's getting upset. And I said to her, well, all your friends' daddies support Trump. I speak to them all. Every single one of them support Trump. And a lot of your friends' mothers do too. So just ask around. They probably won't admit it. So it's not been an easy thing saying, I believe in Trump, because his character is flawed. You know, he's not the sort of perfect suited Obama. And my wife always said she loved Obama because he looked good on television. And I said, he may have come across as presidential, but what terrible woke ideology he's brought to the table. And isn't that more important?
So America tends to lead and the rest of the world to follow. But California tends to lead America, and California is still very Democrat, although there was quite a considerable swing even for California this time around. What are you making of that part, and then where does this bring the rest of the world?
I don't think California leads America anymore. There's no way any American state wants to import the Californian ideologies to their states. People are leaving California for the red pill states, Florida and Texas, in droves. Newsom's done it. It's a disaster, California. It's a disaster. It's not leading America anymore. You know, Trump's going to start moving his businesses out of Los Angeles, and more, you know, important and powerful people will leave California for more red pill states. As is happening in the world, you know, Germany, at long last, after being a pathetic laggard, is going to elect a business-friendly government at last. The world is changing, and it's changing for the better. This is a great new era ahead of us. And in addition to that, if I can go straight into the world order, you know, Russia is desperately weak. The fact that Ukraine could invade the Kursk region without any opposition means anyone can invade Russia. And if Russia gets into a fight with America, Russia will last 30 seconds. America will absolutely flatten them. America is by far the strongest superpower militarily, economically, and technologically. And this is the technology era now. America's going to win for the next 12 years. China is having a hangover. I think China militarily is still the greatest threat to humanity right now over the next 10 years, because as their economy starts to slow down, and it is slowing down, all their social ills, all their environmental ills, all the destruction they've created in society is going to manifest itself in a we need to get militarily more aggressive. They've been unable to expand land on their land mass. They've destroyed all their own natural resources, so they're short of natural resources. I think China's the main threat to humanity and peace. And Trump knows that. So he wants to solve Ukraine as quickly as possible. He wants to sort out the Middle East. And let me get to those two separately, if I may, and then focus on China, because that's where the threat's coming. But America is head and shoulders stronger than China and anyone else.
Rob, before we go into the detail, and I'm looking forward to that, where do you get your information from? I know you've traveled around the world. You are a global businessman. You went to Harvard. You did an MBA there. You've been working in the very, very top area, both when you trained and when you have been running businesses. But where do you get your information that you so so freely sharing with the rest of us?
From BizNews. No, I do. I devour BizNews media, but I also get a lot of my information from friends, prominent business people across mainly Americans. And a lot of the podcasters, the American podcasters. And funnily enough, this is a topic that I last night thought I'd love to bring up because I got into a bit of an argument with my mother-in-law, who's a New Zealander, is a fantastic woman. She's a bit of a lefty. And lefties focus on feelings, righties focus on facts. So we always went, I'm just joking. And I said to her, she said, I'm in an echo chamber. And I go, you know, I follow Ben Shapiro, Jordan Peterson, Douglas Murray. You know, I can go on and on and on. Constantine Kissam, superb. And I devour those podcasts. So I'm in an echo chamber, that center, capitalist, alt-right, whatever you want to call it. And I asked her, I said, you know, I'll make an effort to listen to your side of the story. Won't you suggest some lefty podcasters that aren't just one-trick ponies, that don't just talk about climate change or talk about some woke ideology? Can't you give me some left-wing podcasters that are intelligent, deep, have a broad, you know, topics of discussion and have a sense of humor, some character? Well, it took a while for her to send me some names. And then I went out on some WhatsApp groups and asked for other suggestions. Very few people came back with any. And that amazed me. So I think the left are living off mainstream media, you know, BBC, Guardian, MSN, NBC, ABC, those sort of things, because there's no intellectual basis to what they're saying. Most of their arguments could be destroyed by fact. No, there are two genders. Fact, end of story. There goes that whole nonsense trans debate and women in sport debate. You know, we base our arguments on fact. And the podcasters on the right or in the center where I am are vastly superior intellectually, charismatically, if such a word exists, and they have a sense of humor. And then I'll flip onto stand-up comedy. Find me one left-wing comic that's funny. There isn't one. And for that matter, I can't find any female comics, stand-up comics. I think stand-up comedy is a male and conservative right-wing profession. Or you become a comic and then you get deplatformed all the time and you say, all right, enough's enough. I'm becoming a righty, which Russell Brand has done. He's gone from left to right. And Bill Maher's gone from left to center. Can you find me an intelligent left-wing podcaster? So that's where I get my information from. I did a bit of a Trump weave there to get your answer.
Yeah, but it's pretty relevant because if you're going to have a conversation, you cannot live with narrative. You have to live with facts. And I've had this discussion with Piet Viljoen recently, talking about investment markets and his concerns about some of the overinflated prices. And maybe that's the next thing before we get into the new world order. Your investments, where do you invest? How do you invest? And where do you get your information from?
So I'm not a big public market investor because we have family portfolios that are managed by professionals and I just leave it to them. Every time I've had a view, I get shot down and I'm actually usually wrong. I'm not a great public market investor. So I do a lot of private equity investing, real estate, you know, long-term projects, tech projects, angel seed and Series A, mainly technology. Or real estate, or aviation. But I'm long, long, long on Bitcoin. I've been buying Bitcoin for the last year and buying and buying and buying. You know, all the spare cash, Bitcoin. I've got quite a big holding of Bitcoin. And I think, okay, now I'm really good. Now's my 312 Trump call, okay? Bitcoin is going to $1 million and faster than you think. And here's why. There are two blockchains. I'm simplifying the world. There are two blockchains. There's the Bitcoin blockchain and the Ethereum blockchain, the everything else blockchain. The Bitcoin blockchain is 6, 7, 8 times bigger in value than the everything else blockchain. But the main difference between the Bitcoin blockchain and the Ethereum blockchain, is the Bitcoin blockchain is proof of work. What that means, so I don't know what the words mean, but proof of work means no human being is involved in decision-making in how Bitcoin evolves. evolves other than you buy and I sell. Everything else is pre-programmed. The halvings every 4 years, the number of Bitcoin produced, the amount of power and computer capacity required to solve the algorithms to mine the Bitcoin, the fact there won't be another Bitcoin produced, I think it's in by 2037. It's the most perfect economic system. And with Trump coming in to president, he is a big fan of Bitcoin and blockchain, not just Bitcoin, all the various cryptocurrencies. There's going to be a huge, huge, it's already happening, but even bigger boom as institutions step in and buy. And I think most buyers of Bitcoin right now are not speculators. They're not people using it as currency. They're buy and hold. I think Bitcoin's going to fly. I mean, it's already through $90,000. It's on its way to $1 million.
Funny, when you say that, when Cathie Wood a couple of years ago was saying Bitcoin will get to $1 million, people completely ridiculed her for it. And here's Rob Herzog saying
Cathie beat me to Bitcoin.
Well, Cathie has beaten a lot of people to a lot of things on the new world. And yet she gets described as someone who should be locked up because her views are so wrong. What is that about society? What is that about society, Rob, that those who are engaging in what Jordan Peterson would call the chaos, because we have the order, then you've got to go to the chaos for the order to go forward, that they're always given a hard time. You talk about Bitcoin. I recall when Bitcoin took a bit of a smack last year, there were major, just about every single commentator in South Africa in legacy media, no longer mainstream, because literally it's not mainstream anymore. Trump proved, or the election proved that, was saying, yeah, you see, this is rubbish. This is rat poison, as Warren Buffett or Charlie Munger described it. It's worthless. It's going to zero. And there's no recanting. There's no, oh shit, I got it wrong. It's just almost a belief in what they're saying or what others are saying, so they've got to be right. And yet you get very smart people like Stafford Marcy, Elon Musk, Rob Herzog, Cathie Wood, who are on it, and they continue to buy Bitcoin and continue to say that if everybody believes this is something that is a source of value, then what makes it different to gold, kind of thing.
So you've just said it. It's the new gold standard. That's how I'm looking at it. And Stafford Marcy is one of the smartest guys around. I mean, I really rate him incredibly highly. And I met him through business. He's super smart. And I, you know, devour every word he speaks. And he's right. He's absolutely right. It's the new gold standard. People are thinking, but am I really going to replace my US dollars and pounds with Bitcoin? I'm saying, don't even look at it like that. It's the new gold standard. This is the new basis for everything. You may not use it as currency, or you may use it as currency, but there is a limited number being made, and you need to own some of them now because the price is going to keep going up. Institutions are going to keep buying, moving in, but in an accelerated manner now. You'll look back at 90,000 and go, I wish I'd bought.
But Rob, that original question of mine, the heat that you pull.
Well, you know, when I first made my speech at the Drakensberg conference and it went viral, I was thrown into a maelstrom that, you know, Franz Cornelia called me and just said, your world has changed. Trust me, this is a new world for you. There's no going back, so you might as well keep going forward. And thank you, Franz. He was right. And, you know, the first thing you do when a white guy stands up and says something outrageous is call him a racist. And I survived that because Gate McKenzie, Musi Mamani, Enoch Gonagwana went out and they said, look, you may not like what he says, you may not like him, but he's not a racist, leave him alone. So I survived that wave. And then, you know, and then I called corporate South Africa a bunch of cowards, which they were pre the election, didn't say a word. Silence of the lambs. You know, they got mad at me and they don't talk to me. A lot of them don't take my calls. And on and on and on and on. To the point where, you know, I look in the mirror and go, I tell the truth. I believe in myself. I believe in what I'm saying. And I actually don't care anymore what other people say about me. I don't even look at the comments. I really don't care. And walking down the street, people walk up to me and say, thank you for what you're doing. where the who's who won't take my calls. So it is what it is. I think at some point in your life, you've just got to be true to yourself. But it's a rough ride to get there, a really rough ride.
I've been doing a lot of thinking about what we stand for at BizNews, and I came up with five issues, and I'd love to know what you stand for. Ours are accountability, integrity, equality, and that's equality under the law, equality in every sphere of life, tolerance, and freedom, freedom of expression, freedom to be able to do what kind of business you want to do, freedom to send your kids to any school you'd like to, etc. So those are the five things, and they align with my values as well, obviously, because BizNews is my creation. But from your perspective, Rob, what are your deepest, deepest values? Do you sit down one day and sit down and say, well, okay, I'm really sad that person who I did admire thinks that I'm not Robbie Hirsov, the guy who he enjoyed spending time with in the past, but I'm actually Rob Hirsov, the person who's the Antichrist. Is there anything, what do you draw on to get yourself through that?
You know, there is someone in particular, I won't mention his name, who I was friends with all my life. I was on his board of directors, and I really loved him and admired him and held him in the highest regard, and he won't take my calls. And you know who I'm talking about. And I'm very sad about that. It took me 2 years to get over it. And, you know, the only comment I heard from his wife, who I love, family I still love very much, Rob's too political. And, you know, I was just like, is that the reason he won't speak to me? You know, and I went back and looked at all the mentions I've made of him over the past 3 years to see, have I said something that's really upset him? There are two minor comments, like, you know, he thinks he's the smartest guy in the room, and that's because he usually is. I think that's a compliment. And that he's moved overseas, doesn't live in South Africa anymore. Not for me to say, for him to say. I couldn't find anything else. And then Paul Harris turned his back on me at the cricket, which, you know, Paul's a sycophant to the friend of my ex-friend of mine.
But
can I do? These things hit, you get used to it. After a while, you just laugh at it.
As you must. But what are the values that you stand for? What is, when you write down your list, like I've given you the five here for BizNews, what would they be?
Now it would be just tell the truth regardless of the cost, because I've gone through the pain and now I can do it. You know, let's take climate change for a second. I, like a lot of the tribesmen on BizNews, have always been suspicious of this whole climate change narrative. Suspicious, because it's just such a, you know, our way or the highway. And you're a denier if you don't believe that the greatest threat to humanity is climate change. It's not the greatest threat to humanity. By any means, it's maybe number 10. And most of the problems can be solved if you put in the right incentives, will be solved by technology and by business incentives and extraordinary people around the world inventing things to bring down carbon emissions, to fry the plastic in the ocean, because they can make billions of dollars. That's the way to do it, not through bureaucrats, lawyers, and regulators top down telling us what to do, which is what's been happening. And I've always been suspicious of it, and I've never really spent the time to study and learn and read, but I need to do that because I know it's a farce. I know it's a hoax, and I'm pretty convinced that, you know, we, humanity, are only responsible for 10, 15% of the damage that's being done, or the global warming. The rest of it is just probably cyclical. The earth heats, the earth cools. But these climate change people are nasty leftist, and they're undermining the West, undermining business, and China are laughing at us. China's emissions have gone through the roof while they sell us solar panels, and they're laughing at us. So, you know, I've always been suspicious of it, as I guarantee most of the BizNews tribe. And then these Germans come to South Africa and say, you have to do renewables and you have to close your coal power stations. Gwede Mantashe is right. We should kick them out and fire up all our coal powered stations. Get them going. Use hydrocarbons. Or as Trump would say, drill, drill, drill. And what an inspired choice as head of energy, Chris Wright. You know, he put down his 10 most important things on energy. He wrote it quite a while, a number of years ago. And the last three, Number eight, making energy more expensive or unreliable compromises people, national security, and the environment. Nine, climate change is a global challenge, but is far from the world's greatest threat to human life. And 10, listen to this one, zero energy poverty by 2050 is a superior goal compared to net zero 2050. I mean, that's the head of energy in the U.S. cabinet. This world is heading in the right direction. I'm pumped up. I'm so excited. America on the ascendancy, driven by technology and driven by, you know, decision-making Republicans and a slightly more macho approach. Solve Ukraine. By the way, I'm pretty convinced that Trump and Biden had a meeting. And I must say, I give credit to Biden. He's doing the handover in the most honorable, respectful way. His legacy will be enhanced by this. He is creating a sensible handover with Trump, and Trump is behaving very respectfully and sensibly. And I am pretty sure Trump said to Biden, let the Ukrainians use the missiles to whack Russia. Let's get Russia right on the back foot. The wimpy French and the almost wimpy Brits will allow the Ukrainians to use their, I think it's SCARP and Storm Shadow missiles in Russia. And Russia's going to get whacked for the next 2 months before Trump gets in. And when Trump gets in, he's going to say to Putin, right, you brought in Koreans. You're heading everything to World War III. We will knock you senseless. And I'm not afraid to do it. You're going to back down, take Crimea, take a bit of Donbass, and get on with the rest of Ukraine. Ukraine, we're going to arm you to the hilt. You're never going to be threatened by Russia again. You can join the EU, then there'll be a period of time before you can join NATO. And Russia will have failed spectacularly. Finland, Sweden, and ultimately Ukraine will join NATO. The Western wall against Russia is secure. And Russia's going to, I mean, Putin, I think, will fall apart. Putin will be gone in the next 5 years. China's having a hangover. They've got real problems, but militarily they're a threat, and Trump's right. And on the Middle East, Trump's just going to turn to Netanyahu and say, finish the job. Whack Iran as hard as you can. Finish the job, because Russia's going to back off. Right, that's part of the deal with Russia. They'll back off from Iran. And Iran is isolated. And a final thing about Trump. He should have been and should be given the Nobel Peace Prize for the Abraham Accords. In his first presidency, he got Jordan, Morocco, Sudan, UAE, I think it was one other, to sign the Abraham Accords. And Saudi was about to sign when the Democrats stole that election. And they did steal it. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm pretty convinced now. But he's going to reignite the Abraham Accords. Saudi will sign, and he'll get other Islamic countries to sign, and Iran will be completely isolated. Iran is going down. We might see a free, democratic, capitalist Iran pre-1975 with the Ayatollahs gone. That's coming too.
Those are big calls, Rob, and particularly for a South African living in South Africa, where I'm in fact have an interview with Dr. Charles Small, who's from Cambridge University and the author of the report, that very strong report, where it shows South Africa's links with Hamas, Iran, and the motivation for the South Africans to go to the International Court of Justice in The Hague, essentially because this country was bailed out, or the ANC rather was bailed out, went from bankrupt to having plenty money at the same time. It doesn't take a genius to work out what happened there, but it might take a genius to work out what's going to happen next, because the scenario that you've painted does not sit well with where this country is at the moment.
So at our March business conference, I, in my presentation, said that ANC has taken money from Iran through MTN structures at that conference. And nobody ever challenged me. MTN never called me and said, hey, you know, stop doing this, which means it was correct, okay? Absolutely correct. The ANC were taking money from Iran. All those troubles, all the troubles of the pro-Palestinian nonsense in South Africa was fueled by Iran. And I know that because I got taken out of context They all came after me. I got threatened. It was a pretty horrific week. And a friend of mine said, I'm going to be able to solve this for you. You've done so much for me. I'm going to solve this for you. Drew drove down from Joburg, met the organizers of these Palestinian nasty Hamas attacks on me and other people. And he said to me, the three organizers of all the riots in South Africa, in Cape Town, the three organizers, not one was from South Africa. They're all sent here. They were all from Iran proxies down here to cause trouble. So they get everyone wound up. You know, we've got a pretty moderate, decent, hardworking, focused Muslim community in South Africa, and they were riled up by these foreigners. The ANC took money from Iran. They were bankrupt, and all of a sudden, they were flush with cash. Iran paid them to do this. And the ANC are just prostitutes, basically. You know, whoever pays them the money, they'll jump. But what's happening now is there's a big new sheriff in town with a stick. It's not a wimpy Democrat. It's a tough, macho Republican called Donald Trump. And he knows very clearly, because a lot of South Africans in his orbit, not just Elon Musk, there are lots of others, who are whispering in his ear, let's kick the ANC's ass, which he should and he will. And this will be good for South Africa. And it's coming.
But how would that happen, given that South Africa is in BRICS and it's close to the, if you like, the other nexus of power outside of the United States?
Half the BRICS people are allies of America anyway, militarily or economically. And, you know, the ANC is not particularly respected. South Africa is not particularly taken seriously in BRICS. It's a tiny economy. The ANC, and they know, are transient, not very smart, you know, show ponies at best without much intellect behind them. So I didn't think the ANC has any real allies. You know? It's just, you know, China obviously would love to have Simonstown Port, as Frans Krumnier so intelligently, you know, showed in his triangle of power. Russia just, you know, Russia doesn't particularly want military positioning in South Africa. They just want allies that they can bribe. But I think Russia's a very weak ally for the ANC. It's much more a Zuma friend. And the ANC's going to run out of, you know, evil enterprises they can take money from. They're going to have to kowtow to America. You know, Cyril's going to be, how high can I jump, Mr. America? That's coming. That's a good thing. I think a go, I wouldn't worry about a go. A go's not that relevant. As I think Frans Krumnier pointed out, it'll be renewed, but it's not a big deal. America's not going to use it as the stick. But America is going to say, you know, you have taken money from the evil ones and you're going to behave yourselves going forward. And they will. The ANC are a bunch of cowards. They'll jump.
I'm talking to Matthew Pauser on Friday about his book, where when he was the Treasurer General, he explains how Gaddafi brought money into South Africa to fund the ANC in, I think, the 2009 election, and how he also sent a lot of money out of Libya towards the end, which arrived in South Africa, but no one seems to know where it is. Now, Matthews suggests that it's like the Kruger Millions. We'll never find the source of it. But there have been a few others who believe that when the Gupta's plane left without any checking from any authorities, it had a lot of wealth on it, including perhaps a lot of this Gaddafi billions or millions. We do know that MK was funded by somebody in the last election and is continuing to be funded and is growing as a consequence of it. It's a lot to put into one kind of thought, but you have warned against MK in the past. You said that it's a far worse threat to South Africa than the EFF. What are your updated thoughts on that after what we've now learned from the ANC Treasurer General and the Gaddafi millions?
Zuma's trained in Russia. He's a Russian KGB agent by training. His friends are all in Russia. That's where the money comes from. The main money for MK is from Russia. The main money for the ANC is Iran. Simple as that. China doesn't give that sort of money.
And the Gaddafi money?
We'll never find it. The Gaddafi money has been flushed through the system. It's ended up in ANC bank accounts in Dubai and other places. You know, they've all hoarded the money offshore. That's where it is. They're going to struggle to find, you know, somebody to pay for their next election, because Iran will be gone. They'll be out of action. The Russians will be impoverished or not interested anymore. So I think they're going to run out of money. And maybe the DA and others will start to get money from the good guys. I mean, that would be nice.
It's an interesting place to live, a fascinating place to look forward to the next election, as you talk about. But between now and then, we have a government of national unity. There are concerns that it's fragile.
The biggest concern is economic growth. If the GNU cannot deliver economic growth over the next 2 years, it's on a hiding to nothing. And the problem is that the DA and all the non-ANC parts of the GNU have got the non-essential ministries. You know, I know Leon Schreider's doing an unbelievable job at Home Affairs. Okay, still dealing with the unions, but he's doing an unbelievable job. A friend of mine, Hans Otterling, 7 years he's been waiting for his permanent resident visa. You know, Hans just got it 7 years later. I mean, what has that idiot Aaron Mazzoletti been doing for 6 years? Nothing is the answer. So the DA has good ministries, but they don't have trade and industry. They don't have any economic or, you know, business ideology kind of positions. So it's putting lipstick on a pig. If we don't get economic growth, GNU is going to be under real pressure in 2027, in February, when the municipals happen, not 2026. And then you have the ANC elected conference where Cyril gets kicked to touch, can pretend he's done a good job, he's done absolutely nothing. And who knows who gets elected next? You know, is it a reformist or is it the monster, Paul Mashatile? We've got until then, but the GNU isn't going to deliver economic growth. We've got a problem.
Why do you think Mashatile is a monster? He's actually opening our BizNews conference in March.
He's corrupt as hell. He's as bent as the Guptas. You know, he's the Alexander Mafia. He's very charming and polite. I mean, every time he sees me, he says, you should give money to the ANC. I go laugh. I go, you've got to be kidding me. You'll just steal it. And he laughs and walks on. You know, he's friendly enough. He's a charming man. He's an intelligent man. But, you know, he is one of the bad guys.
He is the deputy president of the country. So
he's one of the bad guys.
He's away from running the place. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what worries me.
Rob, let's just get back to the media and what the election told us about the legacy media and where media might be going in future. You explained that you consume a lot of podcasts, etc. But just by way of background, our trade magazine, if you like, for want of a better word, Semaphore Media newsletter, was explaining how Kamala Harris had been courting. She was very unpopular amongst the media. She'd been courting in much of her 4 years as vice president, the legacy media chiefs and the best columnists or the biggest columnists, etc. So she had really worked hard at courting legacy media. Trump, on the other hand, couldn't give two hoots about them. And he was talking to Elon Musk on X. He was talking to Joe Rogan, other podcasters, etc. We saw the result of that election. What does that tell us about the state and the future of the media working in there, what Jeff Bezos did at the Washington Post by refusing to publish the so-called traditional endorsement? It's not traditional. It's only been since the Democrats started coming into power, but it's now suddenly a traditional endorsement by the Washington Post, but he refused to publish that. And even Warren Buffett refused this time around to endorse the Democratic nominee. So all of those things are very interesting to us as South Africans and on the way that the world is going and how it might impact us here.
So there's so many ways you can get information, devour media. You know, I was working for Rupert Murdoch when there was ABC, NBC, CBS. That was it. He then launched Fox News when I was working for him. He actually asked me to go with Barry Diller. I didn't want to live in L.A., so I said, no, thank you. Stayed in New York. And then multi-channel television, you know, Sky TV, we merged with BSB and to create B Sky B. And we teamed up with NBC, Cablevision, Hughes Direct TV, this is not known, and News Corp, which was us. to launch DirecTV USA. And then News Corp ran out of money, so DirecTV went on its own. And we were working on the dog channel, the cat channel, the money channel. We were talking about doing hundreds and hundreds of channels. So it went from three national networks to four national networks to multi-channel television. And now you've got the internet. You've got thousands of ways to consume media, devour media, get information. And that's where it's heading. But the good thing about it, even though we do exist in echo chambers, you sort of follow the people who resonate with your beliefs and they with yours, is people are now more discerning. If you feel that something's not quite right or just you don't quite believe something, you might dig deeper and look for other views on that. And I think the consumer is becoming more discerning. It interests me that in the First World War, I read a story about the average soldier in the First World War. They were reading Shakespeare, Kipling, all of what we consider the great books. These were people that went to war as the most basic animal in the trenches to have a terrible life for 4 years and barely, if they survived, and they were actually highly educated. Today, I think it's going back to that. People are becoming more discerning and doubting things. And the legacy media is finished. ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, ratings are just plummeting. Hollywood mainstream movies plummeting. They've gone too woke. And people are consuming, based on their own beliefs and choices. It's a very healthy thing.
We see it in South Africa as well, where we have choice of television channels outside of multi-choice. And multi-choice is struggling as a consequence of that. Because if you've got Disney Plus or Apple TV or Prime, or which you do have for Netflix, those four cost me less than half of my multi-choice monthly premium. And I watch them a heck of a lot more. If it wasn't for young Sheldon, I don't think I'd be watching multi-choice at the moment. And of course, sport, which is where they've got the lockhold. So how do you see that all developing, the movement into the even South African arena of these global giants?
So what's happening is you, the consumer, becoming the editor. So when we only, in the UK, only had the BBC, they knew what was right for us. They were the editors. They told us, this is a good program. This is what you should watch. We know what's best for you. Rupert Murdoch says, that's bollocks. Let the consumer decide. And what has happened is taken quite a long time, but the consumer is the editor now. You don't have to watch BBC. You don't have to watch anything. I only watch rugby and cricket on DSTV. Only. I'm thinking of getting rid of it and finding other ways to do it. How dare they tell me I have to pay for all these other stupid channels that I never watch? They're not the editor. I am. I'm in charge. I'm the consumer. And that's where it's heading. So bundling choice, telling us what we have to watch, telling us what we need to listen to, like the celebrities tried to do, doesn't work anymore.
Well, and that brings us to the final point I wanted to talk to you about, and that's Gayton McKenzie. You've backed Gayton McKenzie at a time. I remember at that one BizNews conference where you gave your cabinet and you said, I would make Gayton McKenzie the president, and it was almost a gasp from the audience. And I looked at you and laughed and said, come on, Rob, seriously?
I know you did.
And now look
did
at
exactly
it.
That.
He's become the, well, perhaps because of his background, he's got his feet on the ground. He lacks ego. Because you can just go and read his books and you know where he's been. But he's done a job that has endeared him to many people, including, I think, this whole story with sport and with what's been going on with the Springboks. Now, you've got an inside track on all of that. We have touched on it, but I think there's a bit more depth that we need to look at.
So firstly, I'm Gayton. He will be president of this country two cycles ahead, and he deserves to be. He's the next Malaya. He's a libertarian. He's a capitalist, but he believes he has a social conscience. So he will be looking out carefully to ensure the trickle down works, that the people who are less privileged or struggling or unemployed get lifted up. He does care about that, but he's a capitalist. He believes in rule of law, and he's principled and has the right values, and he's charismatic. People like being with him. He makes the effort. There's a sports team that haven't had their flights paid and are trapped in South America. He picks the phone up, says, money is there, you can fly back. He gets things done. So Gayton, president of this country in 8 years, and he deserves it. Big call, another lot of big calls on the program today. And then the other point, sorry, what was the other point? I've weaved.
On what's happened with sport. And, and you kind of triggered that via your point about DSTV. Because Gayton McKenzie stepped in and made sure that the Springbok matches were televised on SABC. Well, free to air, basically. But when you take it one step further, the sale of the Springboks, you gave us some wonderful insights in that conversation. But there's a lot more going on behind the scenes there. And you start thinking, but hang on a minute, how did this all come to pass in the first place? That somebody's going to get 15% commission just for introducing the Springboks to a potential purchaser who's not the best purchaser anyway. So have you dug anything else up there?
So Brian Mann, he's in the 15th. He's got a big chunk of the 15%. He's keeping very low profile.
The same,
but he's
Brian Mahan.
Yeah, that's the same guy. That's the guy.
Rob,
so it's not really Eddie Jordan. It's not really Eddie Jordan. Eddie's name's out there as the guy because Eddie's kind of a respectful guy that people like. So you kind of go, well, he's a good guy and maybe he deserves a big percentage. But it's actually Brian. He's got the main chunk of that. First to say it.
Okay. Before you go further, Brian Mahan, I was at in a past life, it feels like I was head of sponsorships at ABSA. We were the second biggest sponsorship grouping in the country. It was part of my portfolio there when I was in banking, and we had a thing called the United Bank Soccer Challenge. So I, perforce, was getting to meet people like Stix Marewa, Danny Yordan, you know, not the guys you'd be inviting home to read the Bible with you. And you had Brian Mahan as the puppet master behind the scenes. I thought he'd gone out of the country because that United Bank challenge was closed down, and I thought that was the end of him. But you say he's made a comeback here. And indeed, after all of those people were exposed for what they were doing with soccer, so he's now moved on to rugby.
He's the puppet master. Puppet master again, the same guy. And you know, Gayton called me and said, I listened to your Biz News interview, your discussion on the Saru Springbok deal and Ackley. And he said, look, if you feel so badly about it, why don't you make a bid, a competing bid? And he's right. You know, if I was, I'm not going to, but I think Warren Wheatley and Altvest will, and I know two other groups that are gearing up to make a competing bid, which is good. You know, the more money Saru gets, the better, surely, from the right partner. And then Ackley, you know, I must have sent my words to Ackley, and he messaged me back and said, Rob, I'm so sorry, don't like the deal. And I said, well, I think you've done an unbelievable job. Respect to you. You've rolled over Mark Alexander and Sari. I mean, you've got the deal of the century. Well done you. That's your job. So he said, okay, noted, and moved on. But I think Gayton's been in London, has spoken to Ackley, and he's probably trying to approve the deal, just saying that it doesn't look right. You've got to make him do a better deal here. But Gayton's right. If somebody else can do a better deal, they need to come out of the woodwork and offer a better deal. And Gayton also said he's done deals where it's been 20% commission. And I suppose that's also true. If Saru are so stupid to give 15% for an introduction, you know, it just says it all about Mark Alexander and his team. They're amateurs.
And it's not surprising. They come from the sporting unions, you know. It doesn't mean that they are necessarily people who've been dealing in this area before. But if I understand you correctly, then Ackley are going to come back with a better offer, and anybody else who wants to put something on the table, the Minister of Sport is saying, bring it. Let's get the best possible deal for this national asset.
Correct. Look, they should have up front done a proper process where they invited bids and chose the two best bidders to fight against each other. But you know, because they have no idea what they're doing, that you know, and Brian kind of, you know, he's a persuasive guy. You know, and who knows where that money's got? You know, you always have a little worry in the back of your head that maybe not all of it's going to Brian and Eddie. Maybe the other participants. Let someone else
lifestyle
find out.
Lifestyle audits, not just for the politicians. Helen Ziller, Go Work, Go Broke, the book that she wrote. Her party is being accused of maybe getting a little close to the ANC way of doing things. Helen hasn't lost her compass, has she?
No, she hasn't. She's just trying to get the GNU working and heading in the right direction. The DA are much more pro-West, pro-American than they'll ever be Russia and China. But, you know, they're trying to be the going back, instead of being pro-BRICS, pro-Russia-China, they're trying to move it to being not aligned, which is probably a better position to be in. And Helen is a rock star. And she's the best. Go work, go broke. She's absolutely right. She is a lioness. I mean, I give her 100% credit.
But is she thinking differently now about Gayton McKenzie? Because you're now talking about two people in politics that you admire greatly.
I wish I knew, because the DA have a block about him and they won't tell me why. I keep asking them, give me a shred of proof of why you think Gayton's a bad guy. I mean, the arms of the ANC, the gangster, criminal, whatever you want to say. Just give me a shred of proof. Nothing forthcoming, ever. I think it's just loony bins. They feel threatened in the Western Cape. And, you know, he's proving to be exactly what I said he'd be, an extraordinary, extraordinary politician who cares about this country.
Well, he's certainly done well out of the GNU. The latest numbers from the Social Research Foundation show that they've doubled their share of the vote already, back to over 4%. So that's good news there. And I guess to finish off on politics, Gauteng, what's going on there with Herman Mashaba switching sides? He was such a critic of the ANC. Now he's facilitating them back to power, getting out of his old political loyalties. He has a good reason, he says, for it. Many from the outside are totally bemused. Do you have any insights?
Yeah, I mean, Michael Beaumont, who I like and respect, and Herman, by the way, sent me this letter of all this corruption, Cilia's Brink. I mean, it's, you know, Herman says it's the greatest decision I've ever made. I stand by it for the rest of my life. I think it's just Action SA has completely lost any relevance in this country. It's fizzling out. It's gone. A bit like the EFF. EFF's gone. You know, Moosey's, but unfortunately, a non-starter. Zeebe's a non-starter. You know, all these minority parties are going by the wayside. It's going to be an ANC fragmenting, some to the MK, some to a sort of centrist party with the DA. I suppose the GNU is that, and that's where we're heading. The fight is going to be with MK. The rest, I think, are gone. You know, Action SA gone, BOSA gone, in my view, ZV gone. What's the point? ACDP, sadly, gone.
I had an interesting thought the other day about Neil de Beer, who does a Sunday show with Chris Stain on BizNews, and it's wildly popular.
It is popular. He didn't, I can't help myself, and I watch it.
He's great fun. He's always got a turn of phrase, and then he lightens. He wears the world like a loose cloak, and I love people like that. But wouldn't he have a if one of the parties were to get somebody, you know, we've seen what Ian Cameron has done in Parliament. He really is, he's there, he's working hard, he's calling a spade a bloody shovel, and he's doing a magnificent job on crime. How does one get someone like Neil de Beer into Parliament in some way? We talk, you know, mergers, acquisitions, maybe in politics that's possible too.
You know, I think there's some people that are meant to be in politics and some that are not. So I'm not ever meant to in politics. The best I can do is give my opinions, and I don't have a view on everything, and I just want tribesmen to, you know, forgive me if I'm wrong, and forgive me if I come across wrong, but, you know, I have an opinion, and I like to try and tell it is as it is, and Neil's the same. I think he should stay as a political commentator. He's going to grow in popularity. I do like logging on, you know, I like, don't know why, but I actually enjoy them. He and Chris do such a good job. And I think he should stay in that role. He should build that role rather than getting to politics. I think he'll get lost in politics, as would I.
The outside observer, the canary in the coal mine, and we need lots of them. We have one in Rob Herzog. And thank you, Rob, for spending an hour with us, giving us your thoughts on the most important issues of the moment. Rob Herzog is a global entrepreneur. He speaks, he's independent, and he speaks what he believes and what he knows and what his contact base tells him. And I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.